Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Thursday, February 14th, 2019. Welcome back to the Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And if anybody ever dares to question whether we're committed to this stupid podcast, let the record show that we have now recorded on New Year's Eve and the night of Valentine's Day. Most reasonable humans are with their loved ones right now, sharing a nice meal, getting ready to perhaps be affectionate with one another. And then here we are alone with headphones on discussing, I don't know, Temple's at-large chances or something. Anyway, happy Valentine's Day, Norlander. It's a pleasure to spend this evening with you.
See, you are, first of all, if you want to get into Temple anytime, we're overdue to talk Dumps Owls, who are 18-7 and got a big opportunity at USF on Saturday. You are in New York for work, so listen, you know, you're in your hotel room. You don't have the opportunity to be with your wife. However, as we record this podcast on Valentine's night, out of necessity, my wife, I do not make this up to you. She is watching on the E! Network. She's watching 50 Shades of Grey on the couch as I record this podcast with you. So this is
she going to be ready to go.
I mean, it's not the uncut whatever version, but she's I hooked her up with some Valentine's stuff and she's enjoying, and she's like, yeah, go have fun with your real husband. And I said, thanks, we're gonna have a blast on this podcast. So dedication is there. I thought you were gonna mention all, like, we've recorded at least three podcasts this season that were after the 1 a.m. hour. So but nothing but love for my wife, and she is truly amazing and totally understanding. We're recording Valentine's night because, well, one, we both have duties on Friday. You there in New York, and then I'm on a plane first thing in the morning to try and get to Lexington in time for media availability for obviously the biggest game of the weekend, Vols at Wildcats, which is going down Saturday night at 8 o'clock. So getting this to you for the hardcores, we're getting this to you Thursday night. To anyone listening, we appreciate that. And for the Friday morning commuters, all the same. And I do want to say, as before we before we transition to whatever you want to transition to, I was like doing stuff with the kids and stuff, so I didn't have Twitter up most of the afternoon and evening. And then I brought it up just as we were getting ready to record. And a woman named Jessica Ennis says, she goes, thanks to Matt Norlander and Gary Parrish's podcast a couple of nights ago, my husband is signing off G-Chats now with The World is a Vampire. So we are actually having real world effect on marriages and like G-Chat conversations. Apparently people like this randomly dropping in Smashing Pumpkins references. So I will mix in any and all alternative rock from the 1990s on the podcast. Just say the word. But I just thought that was a little bit too funny. A little Smashing Pumpkins love, and apparently the listenership appreciated it. So
yeah, people were fired up about the Smashing Pumpkins conversation that led to me over and over again announcing that it's true, the world is a vampire. And I figured out the rest of it. The world is a vampire.
Do 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 do.
And to drain. That's all I know.
Yeah, that's good stuff there. I would have actually
like so many other things on the podcast. It happens totally out of nowhere. Devin Downey was never planned. Leaky Black was never planned. I do think I actually did plan for camel fighting. That was planned. I did a lot of research on that in advance. So it just it's something that happened, and perhaps one day it'll happen again.
Perhaps one day it will. And I actually was impulsed to watch the Bullet with Butterfly Wings video the next morning. And that was a follicle-laden Corgan era Smashing Pumpkins. He was not yet bald then, so I had forgotten about that. But anyway, I could really slip down that musical, so let's not get too out of hand here. Reminder, it is Valentine's night. My wife is on the couch right now.
Not only on the couch, she's on the couch watching 50 Shades of Grey. Oh boy, you in for a night.
I got to get up early. I don't know about that, my man.
I actually watched the Bullet with Butterfly Wings video too. Like 3 a.m, I found myself watching Smashing Pumpkin videos on YouTube. And then I actually turned, what's it called? Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. I listened to that album as I fell asleep. And because it was 4:30 a.m, I fell asleep pretty quickly. But either way, I did everything I could do to get the streaming numbers up for Smashing Pumpkins earlier this week. So there's nothing significant or too significant that happened since we last recorded. 5 ranked teams played on Wednesday night. They all won. Houston is playing at UConn right now as we speak. They're up 15 with less than 5 to play. I'm assuming they're going to close that out. Gonzaga plays tonight on the road, but they're about a 20-point favorite on the road. I'm assuming they'll handle that with ease. And so let's just look ahead to the weekend where they're are three games scheduled between two ranked teams, and the big one is obvious. It's number one Tennessee at number five Kentucky, Saturday night Rupp Arena. Tip is scheduled for 8 p.m. Eastern. You can watch it on ESPN. The Vols come in 23-1, 20 double-digit wins. They're 11-0 in the SEC, and those 11 league wins have come by an average of 16.6 points. So they've just been overwhelming people. But this is also true. Tennessee hasn't played a currently ranked team since it beat Gonzaga more than 2 months ago. They haven't played a top 30 KenPom team on the road all season. So this is a test unlike anything else they've faced. Norlander, as you mentioned, you're going to be inside Rupp Arena on Saturday night. How pumped are you for this matchup in Lexington?
I'm pretty pumped. I think it's got a very good chance of being a better game than the previous game day game, Duke at Virginia, which was exciting and had its highlights for all the reasons we've documented earlier in this week on the podcast. But I feel like this one, even though Tennessee has just done so well within the league at this point, I like Kentucky's chances, obviously, on the home floor, coming off a rough loss there. That was Kentucky's first home loss of the season. Tennessee, you mentioned that it hasn't played a top-tier team on the road yet. It is 6-0 in road games this season. Quad one, just 5 games total, 4-1 for the Vols. This is obviously potentially a signature win. And for Kentucky, which has played twice as many quad one games, at 7-3, 10 total opponents to Tennessee's 5. I've heard a little bit of chatter that I completely agree with. If Kentucky, has its eyes on trying to get a number one seed, I actually think it has to sweep Tennessee, given the nature of what's left on its schedule and then what the SEC tournament's going to produce. It's going to be hard, I think, for Kentucky to leapfrog the Vols if they already drop one at home this weekend. So that's potentially just a little bit of a bigger picture objective for the Wildcats there. But I do think it's going to be a close one, and I'm most intrigued to see how much Ashton Hagans is on the floor and then how well he does against Jordan Bone, who, frankly, if you've watched Tennessee much of this season, I think it's not an exaggeration to say that Jordan Bone has been a top five most valuable point guard, maybe just top five overall, just fantastic point guard in college hoops this season. Obviously, Williams and Schofield get the load of the attention, as they should. They're both, Williams is a top five player of the year candidate, and Schofield, you could argue, is really knocking on the door second team All-America status. But Bone isn't really that too far behind, one of the best distributors in college basketball, and he's always on the floor, plays a ton of minutes because he does not get in foul trouble. And so I'm interested to see him versus Hagans or him versus whomever Kentucky tries to put on him. I know the front court's going to be the main attention on the battle, but I almost feel like how Bone plays might dictate whether UT wins or not.
Obviously, because this game is not only a top five matchup, but a game against one of the biggest brands in the sport, Kentucky Hall of Fame coach John Calipari, inside Rupp Arena, on national television in primetime, it's getting a lot of attention. There's a lot of words being written about it leading up, and it's been funny to me to, like, I've read, I think, multiple pieces where the basic premise is, can you believe this is a Tennessee team that doesn't have a single former top 100 high school recruit on its roster? And I'm like, we've literally been talking about that for a year.
Yeah.
We didn't wait until Tennessee was ranked number one in the country to point out how bizarre it was that Rick Barnes has built this reigning SEC championship team in the way that he's built it. We were talking about it last year as Tennessee was marching toward, sharing the SEC regular season title with Auburn. So it is nice to see the rest of everybody finally picking up on this unique roster situation, but it's not really breaking news. The same roster that won the SEC last season didn't have a top 100 prospect on it. Like, that's the one that you're going to watch on Saturday night inside Rupp. And one other thing about Tennessee's schedule, because as you know, every morning I wake up at different times, but among the first things I do after taking a shower and brushing my teeth is I rank 26 basketball teams, and then I tweet a link, and then I just watch people go crazy all in my Twitter mentions. And lately it has been not all, it's never all, but some Duke fans wondering why Tennessee continues to be number one in the top 25 and one when it is undeniable. And when I say it's undeniable, that means I agree with you that Duke has better wins, significantly better wins than Tennessee? And the answer to that question, and I know I've written about this before, I'm confident we've talked about it before, is that I'm not going to drop Tennessee until it loses a game, period, end of story. I do not care how many top 25 or top 50 wins Duke adds between now and the time Tennessee loses next. And it might come Saturday, but if Tennessee wins for the next 3 weeks, I don't care what Duke does or anybody below Tennessee does. Tennessee's going to stay number one, because here's the truth. Tennessee went out in its non-league and they scheduled Louisville, or they had Louisville on a neutral court. They knocked that out. They had Kansas on a neutral court, lost that in overtime. It's the only loss on the resume. They had Gonzaga on a neutral. They went to Memphis and played. And Memphis isn't good, but that can still be tricky. They challenged themselves in the non-league. And ever since then, all they've done is played the league schedule that the SEC gave to them. And so it's not really their fault that they haven't played a currently ranked team since they played Gonzaga back on December 9th, because it is nothing more than a byproduct of the schedule that the SEC gave them. And they're going to be able to change that going forward. They've got at Kentucky this weekend, at LSU the following Saturday, at Ole Miss on February 27th. They host Kentucky on March 6th. They get Mississippi State at home on March 5th. And then they close the regular season at Auburn against a struggling Auburn team. Perhaps we'll get into that another day. But like, if you think Tennessee is fraudulent or undeserving of their ranking, well, we'll find out soon enough. But I'm just fundamentally not going to penalize a team that has been awesome and overwhelming. And that'd be another thing. If they were just squeaking by these unranked teams, they're beating their brains in basically every night. Again, 23 wins. 20 of those 23 have been double-digit wins. 11-0 in the SEC. Average margin of victory, 16.6 points. It'd be one thing if they were squeaking by, but they're taking these unranked teams and just beating the crap out of them. I'm not going to punish team like that. If they lose Saturday at Kentucky or any other place going forward, I'll adjust accordingly. But you don't ever have to ask me again on Twitter. The answer to your question is, until Tennessee loses, Tennessee's going to be number one. I don't care how many top 50 wins anybody below them accumulates.
Yeah, I really don't have much to add to that, GP. Tennessee is fourth in the country in scoring margin. The only teams that are doing better are Gonzaga, which is beating league opponents by 31 points a game. It's insane. Duke is at 20.5, Virginia 18.2, Tennessee 18.1. Guess who's fifth, Parrish?
Oh, probably Wofford.
You're damn freaking right. Wofford. Quadrant one update, 28th in the net ranking, by the way, the Wofford Terriers and Fletcher McGee. How about that? Wofford fifth in the nation. Scoring margin, 17.2. But your point about Tennessee is absolutely accurate, and I just don't even see much fraudulence there. I don't see fraudulence if they lose by 14 at Kentucky on Saturday, because Kentucky's really, really good, national championship contender, champing at the bit. And Tennessee, frankly, maybe they're just due for a little bit of a stinker. I'm not thinking that it's going to happen, but if it does, if you tell me Kentucky wins, you know, 76-64, like, I won't be totally stunned, I guess, but keep the balls where they're at, man. They've been playing and operating like a top three team in America for well over a month.
It's funny, the other night when Duke rallied from 23 down to beat Louisville on the road, we discussed it extensively on the previous podcast. I had a guy who's always tweeting me about the rankings. He said, who also believes that I should not have Tennessee number one, that I should have Duke number one. He said, "Come on, man. You really trying to tell me Tennessee could come back from 23 down against anybody?" And I was going to retweet it and be like, I know that's a trick question, because Tennessee would never be down 23 to anybody. But then I was like, the second I tweet that, they're going to go to Rupp Arena and be down 27 points in the second half. And then I'll be on freezing cold takes and all that other stuff. So I just had to avoid it. But I'm with you. Like, good teams lose on the road to other good teams all the time, and sometimes by double digits. So if Tennessee goes and loses by double digits, that won't be crazy to me, but it also won't make me think that they were undeserving of their number one ranking. And either way, and this is what I always do, I'm rooting for me, which means by extension I'm rooting for the top 25 and one. So I'm taking the Vols to win inside Rupp Arena.
What's the next game?
Trap. What's your pick, Punk?
I don't think we've had a Punk drop on the pod maybe ever. So my pick will be – my pick will go – I'll go Wildcats. And I'll say 75-72 Kentucky.
Yeah, I'll take Tennessee. Let's go 73-72. Tennessee 73-72 to improve to 12-0 in the SEC and to improve to 24-1 on the season. It'll be one of these rare single-digit wins for the Vols, but a win nonetheless. And again, I realize I'm on the wrong side of this from a odds maker's perspective, and it got nothing to do with Kentucky. I really just don't want Duke fans to have to tell me that I told that they told me so. So, I'm rooting for me. I'm not rooting for Tennessee or against Kentucky. I'm rooting for my Twitter mentions, and that means we need the Vols to go into Rupp Arena and win on Saturday night. Another big game this weekend is going to be number 23, Iowa State, at number 18, Kansas State. We're going to get into that momentarily, but first, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. So it's number 23, Iowa State, at number 18, Kansas State, on Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern. You can watch that one on ESPN2. Kansas State enters with a two-game lead in the loss column of the Big 12 standings. That two-game lead is over Texas Tech, Baylor, Iowa State, and yes, the Kansas Jayhawks. KenPom now projects, for whatever it's worth, Bruce Weber's Wildcats to win the Big 12 outright with a 13-5 league record. So they're in a good spot. But this is a tough test for a Kansas State team that's now won 9 straight Big 12 games. They're 9-2 in the league right now. They're going to be 10-2 come Saturday night, Orlando, or Iowa State going to get a road win?
I'll go with some carnage here. Iowa State is a high-quality, high-talent team. Had a weird loss at home last weekend to TCU. Gave up 92 points. Kansas State is fourth in the nation in just points per game allowed, 59.5, doing well in that regard. But I'll ride with ISU here. Took the home favorite with the Wildcats. I'll take the road dog with ISU. Kansas State has played well. They hopped into my power rankings on Thursday. Iowa State's still there, and K-State has lost only once in the past 5 weeks, and that was the weird one. Like, they really should be riding what a 10-game win streak at this point, but they fell at A&M by 12 during that SEC Big 12 challenge. Have not lost a Big 12 game since they fell at Texas Tech on Saturday. And a quick side note on the Red Raiders, they are back and have found their groove and looking tremendous on defense. We'll see what they can do, if they can keep that up. But I will take Iowa State to win this one. Feels like a hard game to really get a grasp on because of how good K-State is on defense. They got the home floor. But I think Iowa State, with all of its talent, is certainly capable. Mariel Shea continues to get better and better, and then they've got a lot of talent around him. Horton Tucker, Wigginton. Tyrese Halliburton is a three-point shooting marvel as a freshman. So give me the Cyclones to muck up the Big 12 conference. Almost like sometimes, not sometimes, I just thought about this randomly, but did you see like Avengers Infinity War? Did you see that movie or no, Parrish?
I did not. Okay. I know like somehow everybody died at the end. But
well,
I
no,
don't.
Not everybody. I don't want to spoil anything, but there is.
I do.
I know, but I'm not going to.
I want to. Thing. You tell me exactly what happened at the end of that movie.
All right. So if you have not seen Avengers Infinity War, I say Affinity War, Infinity War, excuse me. just fast forward for like the next 30 seconds, okay? So basically, the main villain gets this thing called a gauntlet, you know, a big glove, and he's got to have these different Infinity Stones on them. And then when he does that, he wants to wipe out half of all living kind in the universe, and that's what happens at the end of that movie. Some characters live, some characters turn to ash, and then the next movie, when it comes out, it's going to be all about... you know, how those characters that died, like, come back, because we know that some of them, if not all of them, will. But there's a scene in that movie. I swear to God, this connects to a weird thought I have on the Big 12. There's a scene in that movie. And if you're at this point, I guess I've spoiled everything that needs to be spoiled with one other small thing. So Benedict Cumberbatch plays Doctor Strange, and he has the ability to, like, look forward in time and all this stuff. And when Thanos, the main villain, has... there are probably some Infinity War fanboys. I don't know what the crossover was with Marvel fanboys in our podcast, but there might be one or two dudes or women that are big time into that stuff. But anyway, I believe it's Iron Man. Robert Downey Jr. Asks Doctor Strange. He's like, you know, I've looked through the timelines and stuff, and I've looked through X amount of potential outcomes and scenarios, and, you know, Thanos wins this many times. And then Robert Downey Jr. goes, "And how many times do we win?" And he goes, "One," which is annoying, by the way. Like, he couldn't have said, like, seven. Like, only once, only in one possible scenario do the Avengers win. That's annoying to me, but whatever. It's a pet peeve. So what I'm getting at here is I think there are a bunch of timelines here with the Big 12 this season, but there's only, like, one or four in which Kansas doesn't wind up at the end of the standings, because it always happens. And that's why I think Iowa State is going to beat Kansas State, because it's going to continue to make more of a mess of the Big 12 standings. That's a really, really long exposition and a wacky, dorky theory, but there you have it.
Yeah, that even, like, outdid me for really wacky, long explanations about stuff. You're gonna own that crown, at least for this.
I gotta own it. Yeah, I gotta
basketball podcast. Hey, let's ruin some more movies. Like, how about you want to talk about the end of Star Is Born?
I haven't seen it, so can you please not?
Have you not? I thought everybody had seen Star Is Born at this point.
I don't have the time to see that.
Let's spoil the end of Roma. Have you seen Roma yet? I'm trying to watch all the Best Picture nominations.
I haven't seen, though.
No. I knocked out Roma.
I haven't seen Roma.
I can ruin it for you right now if you want me to. I can tell you everything that happened.
You know what? You can go ahead and ruin Roma for me. I'm not that keen on seeing it, so go ahead.
I tell you, no, I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I will say this. It's the favorite to win the Oscar for Best Picture, so I was like, I'm going to watch it. Even though it's a black and white film in Spanish, I'm going to commit to doing this. And I know that it's beautiful, and I know every film critic loved it. Dude, I could not wait for that movie to get over with. I'm not going to ruin it for you, but I don't have any idea how that could win Best Picture, because I was just – like, I had to get – it felt like when you're doing a homework assignment and you're like, okay, if I can just get a little done right now, then that'll be a little less I have to do later. That's the way I felt watching Roma. I was like, you know, if I can watch 15 minutes right now, I'll be 15 minutes closer to the end. That's not the way a movie should be. You shouldn't be just waiting for the end to be done with it. Yeah. That's where I was with Roma.
I agree.
Can't have that winning Best Picture.
So you got Iowa State or Kansas State winning, my man?
I'm taking Kansas State. I'm not picking against the Wildcats in the Octagon of Doom. Are you out of your mind? Do you not respect the Octagon of Doom?
All right, so you're not on board with my Infinity War Big 12 theory. Okay, that's understandable. I don't know if anyone else is, so that's totally fine.
I got lost somewhere in your Infinity War.
Oh, but I will say this. Like, I don't know if you've seen any of these movies. You kind of have to see some to see others, but at the same time, you don't. Like, Infinity War is actually, it's pretty awesome. So that and Black Panther are, like, really, really, really good. So I do recommend that if you can squeeze in the time.
I did watch Black Panther. I don't watch the, like, Marvel movies or the quote-unquote superhero movies, like, on the regular, because it got to a point where there were just too many of them. And I felt like if you missed one, then you needed to watch them all. And I was like, I don't have time to watch 20 movies about superheroes. So I just, like, clocked out completely. But I did watch Black Panther because it was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah. And that was
I enjoyed.
Awesome movie, right? Yeah, I'd say Infinity War is almost even with Black Panther. Black Panther might be a little bit better. So you will, I think you'll enjoy it. So anyway.
I'm taking the Wildcats inside the Octagon of Doom. Again, they've got a two-game lead in the loss column. So wins like these that are basically coin flip situations, because it is, are super important. If not only if you're trying to share, the Big 12 title and like hang a banner. But if you're trying to win it outright so that you can be the school that snaps KU's streak, be the rival that snaps KU's streak, these are the types of games that can help you do that. That's going to be a fun game. Again, Saturday at 4 p.m. Eastern, it's on ESPN2. And for whatever it's worth, even though Kansas State has a two-game lead in the league standings in the loss column, their adjusted efficiency margin actually ranks fourth in the Big 12 behind Texas Tech, Kansas, and Iowa State. That's why, even though the game is being played at Kansas State and Kansas State is in first place in the Big 12, I promise you when the point spread comes out on that, it's going to be one or two. It's not going to be as significant as what some people might anticipate. The third game of the weekend between two ranked teams is number 24 Maryland at number 6 Michigan. That's Saturday noon Eastern. You can watch it on Fox, and it should be noted that the Wolverines are just 2-2 in their past four games. It's the result of Tuesday's 75-69 loss at Penn State that dropped Michigan to 22-3. So, like, look, big picture, Michigan's 22-3, still tied atop the Big Ten standings. Big picture, things are fine. But Michigan has gone from 17-0 to 22-3 in the past month. Put another way, Michigan's just 5-3 in its past eight games, which is an undeniable drop-off from the beginning of the season when they were smashing people. Meantime, Maryland's won two straight. Mark Turgeon's Terrapins are coming off a double-digit win over Purdue, so they're playing well. Bruno Fernando is playing well. But this game is in Ann Arbor, where Michigan is 15-0 this season. Do you give Maryland any sort of realistic chance to go get this road win or not?
I do give them a realistic chance, but I will not pick them. Like, yes, they can pick them off. You know, if you put Maryland and Michigan in this exact same environment and ran it 20 times, give me Michigan 14 out of the 20, probably. So I give Maryland somewhat decent shot. Yeah, Michigan is slumping. I had to finally just yank them out of my top 10 overall, just because it's I don't know. The offense isn't as smooth as it probably should be. Defense is still really, really good. And Brazdeikis Iggy has been good, but he started off the season really, really hot and hasn't been able to continue that the way that he did earlier in the season. But I will take Michigan. Really a nice way to kick off the day. Saturday is not overly loaded with a lot of good games, but this is a really nice noon tip here. And then obviously Tennessee, Kentucky is what you'll wrap with. And then in between, there's some decent stuff here and there, but it's going to be more of a weekend where you look through the day, see if we get any crazy games, wild finishes or whatever. And then you kind of check the carnage on the weekend and see what teams might've slid onto the bubble, gotten off it, who adjusted near the top of the seed lines and all that kind of stuff. But I am fascinated by this game. Maryland has been just a little removed from the, all right, this team is good enough to be in contention for the Final Four. It hasn't quite got to that point, in my opinion. A win against Michigan, they'll probably be made more of Michigan losing, and I guess that's fair, but I think a win here for Maryland might finally bump them up to that next tier, because the Terrapins have been good, but they've just taken losses here or there that's kind of prevented them from really just, you know, advancing to the forefront of the national conversation.
Yeah, interesting game. I mean, any game between two ranked teams, or at least most games between two ranked teams, are going to be interesting. And given that Michigan is not playing as well right now as it played earlier in the season, yeah, you give Maryland a puncher's chance, but I'm not going to pick against Michigan at home against a team that, according to all the computers, is a lesser team. Like, you got home court advantage, you're supposed to be the better team, you're supposed to win that game. I suspect Michigan probably wins that game. I know you do as well. Anything else on your radar this weekend? On Sunday, it's not a game between two ranked teams, but it is a game between two NCAA tournament projected teams. Number 13, Villanova at St. John's. It's going to tip at 5 o'clock Eastern, again on Sunday. It's inside Madison Square Garden. It'll be on FS1. Jerry Palm's got the Red Storm right now as an 8 seed. They're 47th in the net, 53rd at KenPom. So Jerry likes them more than the computers like them. But this is sort of interesting. Even though they are safely in the field right now, according to Jerry, they haven't won consecutive games since January 1st and January 5th. Here's the way that stretch has gone. After they won two games straight, then it was a loss and a loss, and then a win, then a loss and a loss, then a win, then a loss, then a win, then a loss, then a win. So they got an opportunity to string victories back-to-back for the first time since early in January 2019. But obviously, Villanova is a pretty tough test. But that is an interesting game, even if it's not a game between two ranked teams.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting. Villanova losing in that spot would then open the door for Marquette, obviously, to go even if Marquette can maintain that when they meet again. I would say that's the most intriguing of the games that we didn't touch on. Sunday overall, I mean, as we record this podcast here, man, you've got Michigan State hosting Ohio State at CBS 1 o'clock on Sunday. And, I mean, I'm watching right now, Illinois is up 55-51 on Ohio State as we are wrapping this podcast. So that game becomes all the more urgent if the Buckeyes can't pull this out here. That's the other, I guess, notable game of Sunday, because otherwise there's just not a lot there. I will say, you know, standard Friday prediction here. Buffalo plays at Toledo. Toledo is a top 50 KenPom team. Buffalo would still have at-large credentials, I think, easily, even with the loss here. But if it gets a win, like that's a high-quality road win, quad two road win. Just adds to the resume, keeps their chances at having a good seed out there. But I'm going to take Toledo to beat the Bulls. So, are you willing to make a Thursday prediction for a Friday podcast, or technically a Thursday podcast? Do you want to just throw out a prediction for that, or are you going to bypass that altogether?
I don't pick Friday games. We've been through this.
Okay.
I mean, listen, everybody has to, you have to draw your line wherever you want your line to be. Yeah. If you aren't principled in this world, you're going to end up, I don't know really where I was going with that.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I was trying to make something sound really good. I just couldn't find the words for it. But my point is, I don't pick Friday night games. That's a decision I made a long time ago. I committed to that.
Oh, boy. Other things hitting my radar.
Hold up. I'm not going to predict the game, because I don't pick Friday night games. But I will say, there's no real shame in going and losing at Toledo for all the reasons you pointed out. Toledo's good. But at what point, if they lose at Toledo and maybe lose again somewhere, at what point are they like in a real bubble conversation?
I think
they don't have good wins.
I think two more losses and they're in a bubble conversation. Because if you really look at the other teams that would be around them at this point, GP, they still have a resume that rises above that. I mean, listen, winning at West Virginia, at Syracuse. Syracuse is quad one. West Virginia is quad two, I believe, at this point. I don't have their resume up in front of me. But you're right. But I still think, only three losses. And the losses, one's a quad one. I think the other two might be quad twos. You might have a quad three in there. But you're right. Two more, and they're there. I think one more. They've got a little slack. But we'll assess if we get to that point.
Yeah, and I don't want that to come across as like get Buffalo out of here. I'm just saying because listen, I'd rather have Buffalo in the tournament as an at large than some completely mediocre SEC team that we've watched just when we know exactly what they are. They've got some quadrant one wins because they had a million opportunities, but they lost more than they won. I don't care about those teams at all. I'd much rather have a Buffalo team that might be sitting on like 28, 29, 30 wins on Selection Sunday, because I do think they're capable, just like last year, of knocking people off. But their rise into the national conversation, because they've been ranked all year now, is super interesting with the benefit of hindsight, because it was rooted in two things, really. The win at West Virginia and the win at Syracuse. Well, the win at West Virginia doesn't mean anything anymore. West Virginia is terrible. Mm. And I'll give you credit. You predicted it in the preseason. I didn't. Everybody else had them in the top 25. You said West Virginia not going to be good. They're not good. But at the time Buffalo beats West Virginia, nobody was screaming West Virginia's not any good, except for maybe you. So that win's like, ooh, Buffalo might be serious. And then they run off a whole bunch of additional wins, and then they go to Syracuse. And beating Syracuse is rock solid. I'm not trying to discount anything, but it's like Syracuse ain't as good as we thought Syracuse was going to be. And then the rest of their resume is just, it's whatever. And so they do have a win over San Francisco that's probably
solid. It's solid.
Better than it sounds. And they have a win over Toledo that's better than it sounds. But if they – I just – my point is this. They're in the top 25 right now. They are not safe from being, you know, in a real bubble conversation if they slip up at all going forward.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's fair. One other thing I have to mention here, because I don't know if we're ever going to get to it on the podcast or not, but like Oklahoma is freaking weird, dude. Like two straight years they've done the same thing.
Basketball program or as a state?
As a basketball program. Yeah. I have not been in, I don't think I've ever been in the state of Oklahoma. I cannot comment on that. But last season, this season, with Trae Young, without Trae Young, they've had these really nice starts in non-conference play, beating legitimate opponents. They've got a win over Wofford, and then they get to the Big 12, and it's just a disaster. Like, Oklahoma is now 3-9. At one point, this was a 12-2 program. It's now 15-10, has a road game at TCU. Figure TCU is going to win that. But whereas last year, Oklahoma still picked up wins enough to get into the tournament. It finished 8-10 in the league. It could take its 10th league loss this Saturday. Like, it's just going to be worse. And so the Sooners could meet a pretty brutal fate. And if that does happen, they would be probably the worst finish with the best start of any team that started off well and then it just completely left them entirely. Worse than Syracuse, worse than anyone you want to imagine or think up. So just wanted to throw that out there. Oklahoma, your season's kind of on the line here Saturday at TCU.
Well, you know, they're another team that I think is a little bit like Buffalo in the sense that they got some stuff done early and you're like, okay, maybe this team's for real. Then you look back at what they actually got done with the benefit of hindsight. And the Wofford win is impressive, undeniably. But, like, it's also just a home win over, you know, it's just a home win.
Watch yourself.
I wasn't going to go. I stopped myself. I'm not trying to speak negatively about the Terriers. I love Spartanburg. But it's a home win over Wofford. They beat Florida on a neutral. You start going, okay. Everybody beats Florida. Florida's got 11 losses right now, below 500 in the SEC.
You can just walk into the O-Dome right now, GP.
Anybody can walk into the O-Dome right now. I wish to God Wofford would walk into the O-Dome right now.
I know. That's for those who might not realize, that's a little bit of a throwback reference on the pod. Anyway, but you're right. And then, like, Notre Dame's not good.
They beat Dayton? Whatever. Yeah. They beat Notre Dame? Doesn't mean anything. Wichita State's obviously down. They beat USC? Doesn't mean anything. Creighton is very average. Northwestern stinks. Really, the only good wins on the entire resume are Wofford and TCU? That's probably it?
Yeah, that's it. That is it. Which is wild because I was thinking – because I was at the game with Chicago, Northwestern, right. CBS Sports Classic. I went there. They won in overtime. And in that moment, they're 11-1. I'm thinking – This is amazing. Like, no Trae Young, you guys are on your way, and then just uh-uh. And they're really good defensively. Like, it's last year they had offense and no defense, and now it's a little bit of the exact opposite. And so, yeah, Sooner fans, I feel for you. It's got to be frustrating. Basketball in general in the state of Oklahoma is not that good this year, but the Sooners in particular, they're a bit peculiar. And so you asked what other things were flying the radar. That's it. It's not like this loaded weekend, by no means. But as these things sometimes go, we could get a story or an ending or something that we just don't see coming. Like NC State's at Duke. I think Duke is going to win with ease. That's a 6 o'clock tip on Saturday. We'll see what ridiculousness is brought out from the freshman there or whatever. But as always, we'll keep our eyes out, and whatever's worth chatting about, we'll be here Sunday night for it.
And I do want to thank you guys who have been following our, not instructions, but request of subscribing to the Ion College Basketball Podcast and rating it and leaving good reviews and good ratings, because it's showing up. We're now over 1,000 reviews. Nice. On iTunes. And like I said, every time we publish a new episode, it shoots right to the top of the category of college and high school podcast, and that includes the sport of college football. As much as we love college basketball, the truth is a college basketball podcast should not be beating a college football podcast. College football is a much bigger sport, and yet because you guys have been so awesome, like, we're beating them every single time we publish. So that's been awesome to see. I really appreciate everybody who's taken the time to not only subscribe, but rate it 5 stars and leave nice comments, because it does make a difference. So thank you guys for doing that. And shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. Teagle, the legend. Shouts to Larnell. And enjoy the weekend of college basketball. We're going to be back. Talk to you again on Sunday. Till then, take care.